Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Clearly, the fight against oil extraction in the Amazon continues. A lawsuit was filed just last week. Again, you tweeted yesterday around breaking news. You tweeted after, just to give people a sense, after 100 pages of legal briefing, the appellate court today denied my release in 10 words. This is not due process of law, nor is it justice. In these last 30 seconds, is it definite you will be jailed tonight?
Nothing's ever definite. We are going to make one final attempt to go back to my trial judge and ask for more time so I can get properly designated to an appropriate federal prison. I don't know if she'll grant it. We're going to do that shortly. I am prepared and fully expect to, around 2 o'clock today, leave my home on the Upper West Side of Manhattan and report to prison, where I will spend the next 6 months.
After serving over 2 years under house arrest for a misdemeanor, Stephen Donziger, the environmental lawyer targeted by Chevron after he successfully sued the oil giant for ecological devastation in the Ecuadorian Amazon. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for two positions, Director of Finance Administration, Human Resources Manager. Apply at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Does your employer have a matching gifts program? Many companies offer dollar-for-dollar matching charitable contributions for donations you make to KBOO. The impact of your gift may be doubled or possibly tripled. Participating companies also match gifts made by retirees and/or spouses. Matching gifts are a great way for you to maximize your membership dollars. Check with your company's human resources or accounting departments to find out if your employer matches charitable contributions, then request a matching gift form. For more information on companies making matching gifts, go to kboo.fm/employer matching.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m., it's Wednesday. It's time for the Wednesday Talk Radio program with your host, Paul Roland. Stay tuned here to your community connection.
Hold your head up, lift the top of your mind, put your eyes on the earth, lift your heart.
Good morning. This is your regular host of the Wednesday Talk Radio program, Paul Roland, and that was the inimitable Buffy St. Marie with our, what has come to be our theme song over the past year or two. We really like that song, and we like Buffy St. Marie, and she really tells it like it is. So with that, we are going to have two live guests this morning to talk about a very major proposed extractivist project in northern Arizona in northern Nevada, which you will probably be hearing quite a bit more about as the months go by. It's a proposed lithium mine called at Thacker Pass, which is a sacred traditional land to the northern Paiute and western Shoshone people and descendants of the members, tribal descendants of the Fort McDermitt Paiute Shoshone tribe are standing up in a group called the People of Red Mountain, who are standing against destruction of their land, water, air, and life on ancestral monuments, such as mining projects like Thacker Pass. They've established a water and land protectors camp near the proposed lithium mine. You can read all about this project at our website at kboo.fm, Wednesday Talk Radio. And of course, this is a very propitious moment with the number 26 Conference of Parties, which is the UN structure which has been discussing the imminent threat of climate change since 1995 and haven't gotten very far. And also with the Biden infrastructure plan, the proposed Green New Deal, all of which are going to focus on electric cars as one of the attempted technological fixes to this problem. And of course, the electric cars, like other electrical battery storage technology, right now depend largely on lithium. There are many other elements, minerals that are being used, being experimented on to replace lithium. But lithium is the going thing. So there's a huge worldwide pressure to get the lithium out of the ground. And one of those places is, as I said, Thacker Pass. So with that, I want to introduce two of the members of the People of Red Mountain. Deronda Hinkey. Good morning, Deronda.
Good morning.
And Gary McKinney. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning.
So let me just hear a little bit about your own personal stories and how you got involved in this before we talk more in depth about the project and open it up to listeners to call in. Deronda, you are a recent graduate in environmental studies and policy from Southern Oregon University and a Tribal Partnerships Associate with the Lomakatse Restoration Project, which is dedicated to restoring ecosystems and the sustainability of communities, cultures, and economies in Northern California and Southern Oregon. And you're also serving as the secretary of People of Red Mountain. So how did you get into this fight?
Yeah, so I am a former Durant Paiute Shoshone tribal member. So this mine is the closest tribe to this mine, Fort McDermitt. And so I realized that our current tribal council was involved with Lithium Nevada, and that really got my attention. I actually had no idea that there was a lithium mine. Maybe I was too young, maybe I was not paying attention, but I was right out of school at that time, and I read something. I was like, hey, what is going on? So this is when I started, you know, talking to relatives, asking what they knew about it. And since then, it's, you know, gone off, and we've done a lot of really good organizing with a lot of good people and had a lot of help. We started this protest camp at Pihimaha, or also known as Thacker Pass, and it is Indigenous-led. And so it's really interesting. I'm really glad that I worked with Lomakatse Restoration Project, because they had a really big hand in, you know, shaping my views on, you know, Indigenous, you know, rights and how we should be speaking up more, especially with Sandy Rock and Line 3 as well. But yeah, that's kind of how I got involved. And I first came out, well, so there was a first protest camp, and I first came out to their protest camp on March 2nd of 2021. So just, you know, just of this year. And since then, we've made a camp. And yeah, now we're here. But I'll leave the next question to Gary.
Well, Okay, yeah, I wanted to ask you a little more about your time at Oregon State University. But yeah, let's get, so Gary, you are also, belong to the Western Shoshone Northern Paiute people, and you're also a member of the Northern Nevada chapter of the American Indian Movement. I'd like to ask you a little bit about the, you know, the history of AIM and the Northern Nevada chapter, but you can say whatever it is about what brought you to this struggle.
All right. Yeah, I'm a Western Shoshone from the Duck Valley Indian Reservation. We're not far from the Fort McDermitt Indian Reservation, and if you're standing out there on the proposed mining site, the wind will blow directly towards my reservation and back east, you know. And, you know, a lot of the times, you know, they don't really understand that much. And when I was on during the commenting period for the NDEP, their commenting period, you know, I mentioned that, you know, they're not able to see that back east, you know, back in D.C., you know, or so on and so forth. And, you know, our main purpose here is fighting for this air quality in protecting our water. Yeah, but, you know, it's true. I'm a patched-in member of the American Indian Movement. It's a family thing, traditional thing. I'm not, you know, you strip all that away and then, you know, it's just me. I'll still be willing to fight for the people. I'm still willing, you know, whether it be in this state or in another state over or something, you know, I'm always willing to help my people out wherever I can. And, you know, right now we're a peaceful people. Us AIM guys, you know, as AIMsters, we show up and we're prayerful. We have our hand drums and we sing and we're for the people, you know. But we also understand too that there's some of that historical trauma that's going on, and you know, but that's not, we weren't a part of those groups or you know, those autonomous AIM groups. We weren't part of their leadership, or you know. We bring this prayerful movement right here, right now, and
well, that
you know, we're go ahead.
Well, just you brought up the autonomous AIM chapters. This might be some sort of internal AIM history that people aren't really familiar with, and we don't need to go into all that. That's a long story.
Yeah.
You probably know a lot more than I do, but I guess so. Your chapter is like a there's the governing grand council. Which sort of sanctions individual chapters. So your chapter goes under that organizing structure is what I understand you said.
Yeah.
And but people may not be that, you know, people might not hear that much about the American Indian Movement these days. Obviously, you know, starting back in 1968 and through, you know, well, it's actually next year is going to be the 50th anniversary of the Trail of Broken Treaties, which people are starting to talk some about. And many of, you know, the takeover of not Alcatraz, that was like before, or that was a separate thing. But the Wounded Knee, takeover of Wounded Knee, many different occupations, many different actions historically, but people may not be that familiar with the AIM being active presently. So so you have a chapter. How long have you been involved? Has that Northern Nevada chapter been around for a while?
About 6 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's about 6 years. And you know, I got involved with this this fight for our people in Thacker Pass before I was before I was a patched in member. Before I was an AIM supporter, so there's a difference there, but there's accountability all the way around. You know what I mean? I mean, when I say we're a prayerful people, that's how, you know, that's how our movement is. You know, our mind, our state of mind is prayerful. So we can't have like like a disruptive bunch a million miles away. You know, doing the opposite of what we're actually, you know, our mind state is, you know, so that kind of, you know, is the kind of contrast. But, you know, we're all for the people, and we're all an extension of those old time days, you know, those old warriors. Those, if we don't stand up as, you know, as indigenous people now, and, you know, we don't learn those things, we don't learn how to communicate with the corporate state, if we don't understand any of those things, you know, we're still the underdogs, and we still they're still up on us, I should say. And so, you know, that goes a long ways. We'll say, you know, knowledge is power. The more that we know about our history, about our roots, where we come from, our family trees, you know, our tribal histories, and how we're involved in these treaties, the more that we know about that, you know, the more of a pushback we have, and the more of a pushback that we do not have, we're gonna continue to see these things like the General Mining Law of 1872. We're gonna see that running roughshod over indigenous lands forever. And we're trying to tie in from where we're standing to, you know, we understand a lot, a whole bunch, but, you know, it's the fact that they use their pen weapons and their paper weapons behind closed doors in secret meetings. That's the only advantage that they have over us.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of that, the process. I just wanted to get back to Dharonda in a second here, but so you mentioned, you know, the whole idea of being indigenous led, and you talk about being prayerful. And that's something I think that sort of a new generation of activists or protectors, not non-Native activists, protectors who have gotten involved in some of these struggles. Dharonda mentioned the DAPL, the Dakota Access Pipeline, that I think a lot of people were really struck by the sort of the difference in tone, you know, the presence of elders involved, the presence of ceremony. And I just think that's a really, you know, a really important thing, as, you know, as people realize that, you know, the wars against the indigenous peoples are still going on, and that there's people standing up for, you know, there's indigenous people are on the front lines of so many of these fights, because they, you know, a lot of these, most of these extraction projects or pipelines impact Native communities. And so I just want to turn back to Dharonda. You did mention Dakota Access Pipeline. You're young now, and you're obviously younger then. You meant Line 3 is a little more recent, but were you aware of that? Did people you know get involved in the Dakota Access Pipeline?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people that I knew on the reservation or other reservations or sister tribes, the whole Paiute Shoshone Nation, a lot of people went over there, you know, and I think that was really powerful. And again, I think that really was like a turn of an era where people started, you know, thinking about like, hey, whose lands am I living on, you know? What are indigenous rights? And then also for our indigenous people, they were starting to say like, hey, it's time to start speaking up. It's time to start fighting for our tribal resources, our cultural resources, our culture, our language, you know, everything. It was a good time, you know. I think that's what kind of laid the ground for us over here at Pihinha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's get right into it. I didn't really I didn't mention some of the background of the project. You can fill that in, but it's a proposed lithium mine by Lithium Americas, which is a Vancouver, Canada-based company. It seems like so many of the mining corporations that are doing projects all over the world are Canadian-based, which is interesting. Anyway, it's the proposal for 5,000 acres using an open pit, which would be roughly 1 mile across and 2 miles wide. And it would provide up to 25% of global lithium supply, as I said, to feed the growing demand for the so-called green battery technology, largely for the new generation of electric cars. and other use. There's storage for alternative energy powers that are intermittent to store them long term. There's a big thing that people are trying to use these batteries. So there's a lot at stake that you are kind of there in the eye of the storm on, in terms of this. Talk about when the project started. You could, either of you, when you heard about this project being proposed, and sort of at what stage it's at now. Which one do you want to go?
I'll go.
Okay.
So it was just this past year that I actually knew about the project, but by then it was already approved, the final environmental impact statement, as well as the record of decisions. And so that was like, whoa, why was I informed? And I kind of blame it on, being at school, being away from the reservation. And so that happened. But then also, I have my auntie here that's at camp right now, and she said that she knew about the Thacker Pass lithium mine, but she was never told about, all the harmful environmental impacts, which environmental impacts, you say that, but they're actually cultural impacts to the tribal people. And so she thought that, it was going to be good for us, we were going to get jobs. And, props to Lithium Nevada for doing really, really good public relations and getting out into the communities and telling them, the good stuff and giving them incentives, good job, because, a lot of people still think that. They're like, well, what's wrong with the lithium mine, Lithium mines are all over Nevada. What's wrong with this one? But I think we need to start looking at, this Thacker Pass lithium mine, it's going to set a precedent for the whole nation and, more lithium mines being popped up all over. We're here at Thacker Pass or Kahinaha, but there's another lithium mine not very far away from here, maybe 20, 30 miles north of us. And it's on the Oregon side. And so that's in Mount Hair County. And so we need to start thinking about these things. Hey, this is not going to be, just a Paiute and Shoshone problem. It's not going to be a Nevada problem. It is going to be a national and global problem. It already is. We've already destroyed Argentina, Bolivia, and Chile. Salt flats,
There's some background noise. I don't know which one of you, but maybe you could try to avoid that. It's slightly distracting. No worries. So Gary, talk a little bit. You said you've been involved in this for a while. So what are some of the concerns? What are some of the environmental and cultural resources at stake with this proposed project?
Yeah, man. I gotta say, when I introduced myself with this situation, like how Dorenda's saying, it was enticing, like ooh man, jobs and money, but it's not about that, man. It's not about being colonized. It's not about colonizing. It's about decolonizing and breaking out of that, breaking out of that money, progress, ideal making. We're back here in the sticks, right? So we don't, the people that are getting the finished product of the lithium, we're in New York or New Jersey or somewhere, they're not going to see the destruction, the big hole in the ground, and how it's not green, how they don't care about the grass and the trees and the water and the air. To us, that is the definition of green, man. Nature, natural. What they get on the other side isn't about that money, man. They could put green energy on it or white gold or lithium rush, whatever they want to put title they have on it, man. But to us, it's destroy Mother Earth for that energy. It went along with the fossil fuels and the dinosaurs. They found a way to harness that, the energy from that, those fossil beings, and convert it into energy. And that was the fossil fuels. Now they're running out of that. Now we want to switch over to something different, something more extravagant, something that's going to save global warming, something that's going to save everything, which is, ta-da, lithium. And you know, we don't we're seeing them rush through 4 to 5 years worth of research they're supposed to do. We're seeing them compact that into less than a year's worth of research, and then they present that to people. And then how Duranda's saying that their public relations people are so good is that they're going to that finished result there, and that's what they're telling people. That's what they're saying. Hey, look, this is good. This is great. This is the next best thing for us, and people are falling for it. But not enough of us are standing on the side, understanding, saying, hey, wait a minute. You know, you need to stop. You need to slow down. You need to actually do what the policy says and take those 4 to 5 years and study the ecosystem of the sage hen, the sage grouse, of the golden eagles back there, of the, you know, all those wildlife. There's springs, there's hot springs back there. Man, it's abundant in nature back there, and that to us is green. That back there is paradise, man. That's heaven back there. That's nature in its fullest, purest, truest form, and they want to take that, molest it, and turn it into a big money making, for, you know, Fortune 500 company. And where we disagree, man, I disagree. That's what I'm bringing to the table. You know, I understand that much, and that's why I'm screaming, man. You know, we have to teach our younger generations how to be savvy to these languages, and how to pick up on those words, and, you know, so, know these red flags when we see them.
And, speaking of red flags,
stand up for our people.
So let's talk about a little bit about the legal situation. You know, what land, you know, obviously this is on traditional indigenous territory. I understand that it's actually that newly uncovered evidence proves it was the sacred site of a massacre of dozens of Native Americans in 1865, which is at least 31 Paiute men and women and children were murdered by federal soldiers at Thacker Pass. That's from a new motion filed in federal court that just came out a few weeks ago. Obviously there's the environmental concerns, water concerns, endangered species concerns. But Duranda, you said that, you know, this has already been approved, that you found about it late. Some people knew about it. Some people had been didn't know about some of the impacts, maybe didn't know some of the historical cultural issues, but now people are growing to know that. But is it, the whole issue of consultation, you know, there's individual Native Americans can do so much, but often it's the officially recognized, federally recognized tribes that have some more say often in legal proceedings and stuff. So what happened with that, and where are things at now in terms of the legal process? Are there lawsuits? Is the Fort McDermitt tribe, other tribes actually trying to get involved in this? Are they not involved? What's going on?
Good question. We're still in the legal fight. Legal stuff is really slow. It's a process, and it takes time. But currently where we're at is, we had a meeting with the BLM this October 21st, and they're still trying to, you know, fight back and argue about how...
When you say BLM, I just got to step in. You know, people think of Black Lives Matter, and it may be what people used to know more, the Bureau of Land Management, as the acronym for Bureau of Land Management. That's the one you're talking about. So it's on Bureau of Land Management managed land right now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Bureau of Land Management. We had a meeting with them, and they're still trying to argue that the massacre did not happen in Thacker Pass. And I think that's really funny. And it's really typical. Again, these legal systems aren't set up for Indigenous people or people of color. And it's just really interesting that the Bureau of Land Management is saying that it still did not happen in Thacker Pass, even though we have evidence. And just to mention this, people are now in, like, half of the people or more than half of the people are direct descendants of Oxfam. And Oxfam is a survivor of that 1865 massacre, the one that killed 31 plus Paiute and Shoshone men and women and children. And so That's happening. It's really slow, you know. We're just waiting for responses. There's a lot of things happening, you know, between our attorneys as well as Lithia Nevada and Bureau of Land Management. And we are currently, the people around are currently asking for an occupancy permit to continue this protest camp at Thacker Pass. However, they've been really reluctant and are still trying to object on why why they're not going to give it to us. And so, yeah, that's kind of like the gist of where we're at. But early next year, you know, January, February, somewhere in there, I believe the judge is going to make a decision or start merits. So we'll just see and have to wait. But, you know, on this downtime from this lawsuit, it is like big time. It is show time to, you know, start talking to media, start talking to legal protective agencies, you know, our radio shows, podcasts. It is time to get the word out, because the more, you know, national attention we get, the more awareness we have of, you know, this project site, is the better chance we have of talking to Secretary of the Interior, Deborah Holland, who is who we want to talk to. That is who we want to have a meeting with and sit down and, you know, discuss Thacker Pass lithium mine as well as lithium in general.
Since the Bureau of Land Management is under the Interior Department, which Deb Holland runs at this point, which is interesting since she herself is native. And so, yeah, so what is anything actually going, what, you know, take us through the, take us through what that, and either of you can jump in, whichever, take, you know, what's the land like? Is there, what's going on at the proposed mining site? How close is the protest camp to the proposed mine site? Give us a little bit of the lay of the land.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, the proposed mining site, I believe our gathering area location sits on the processing plant proposal site. Yeah, and, you know,
so nothing. So no activity has. What kind of activity has actually started? Have they moved any machinery there? Have they put up, you know, surveys? You know, what's actually going on in terms of the project?
Yeah, but when we're for the past, I'd say like month and a half to 2 months, we've been expecting the bulldozers and, you know, and those things to happen, but in all actuality, what we get is the secret little mosquitoes that happen behind us, you know, when we're asleep. That's what we get, man. We get the white trucks out there driving around behind us secretly, checking their meters, and they're, you know, they're working on their wires and stuff, man, and getting readings and whatever they're doing back there, man. But, you know, it's not digging technically, but so they're back there still, you know.
Do they have anything fenced off? Can you actually go onto the site?
They have their stuff fenced off. I mean, they have a big dugout spot where they were where, you know, like a test digging area,
mm-hmm.
And it's fenced off. It's got no key, no, you know, stay out on it. You know, but we went down in there, man. Screw it. You know, we went down in there and looked at those things, and you could see, man, like about maybe a 15-foot high, you know, face of a dugout right there, and you see the layers of the lithium. You know, you see what they're after, and it's crazy, man. That it's really like that, man. They're going crazy for stuff like that, you know.
Well, it's a you know, it's a it's like the new gold rush, you know, in yeah. some sense, which obviously yeah. Native people suffered tremendously from in the 19th and 20th centuries. But yeah, lithium, it's it's not in itself, you know, that valuable. So they actually have to mine a huge quantity of it to get the economic value of it. But yes,
it's the water that gets me, man. They want it's summed out to 50,000 gallons of water per one metric ton of lithium. EV, an electric vehicle, is 1,200 pounds. A smartphone is 3 grams of lithium. You know, so that's what they're after. That's what they're willing to that's what they're willing to disrespect cultures. That's what they're willing to kill for. That's what, you know, that's what, from the very beginning, from gold, from the westward expansion in the Louisiana Purchase, Lewis and Clark, to, you know, the Manifest Destiny and the Gold Rush. All of it was pushed by something, and, you know, and I'm not gonna say what it is, but, you know, that's that driving force behind it. And now they don't even see that. There's no spirit. They have no spirit. There's no spirituality with them, and that's why it's so easy for them to go and disrespect our spirituality and our cultures. And they've been doing that for generations now, and it's time to say something. It's time to say something. It's time to stand up. And it's time, you know, we're it's, you're seeing it all over the place, you know, down there in Oak Flats, man. The brother, the Apache brother and Apache sister down there, you know, they're speaking just like myself and my cousin. You know, that's what we're supposed to be doing, man. Our ancestors had that prayer for us a while back, man.
Yeah, that's talking about. So I would just want to clarify for people who don't know about it. They just had a hearing at the Ninth Circuit Appeals Court in San Francisco, and they had a spiritual convoy that went through various towns and cities on the way to San Francisco, the San Carlos Apaches, led by Wenzler Nosey, former tribal chairman. Anyway, he was actually on Democracy Now! On Monday, which was good. And that's a huge copper mine. And I'm not sure if that's actually a Canadian company too, but I believe it is a foreign-owned, I think it's Rio Tinto. I believe that is Canadian. Anyway, as I said, there's a lot of Canadian mines. But that's another huge issue that's been going on for years and years and years. And Trump let it go through, and Biden isn't doing anything to stop it. Of course, the Thacker Pass, the lithium mine there, was fast-tracked under the Trump administration, and remains to be seen what Deb Haaland and the Biden administration are going to do. But it sounds like we have our first caller, and I haven't yet. Boy, we're already 8:35, so yeah, I really should give out the phone number. It's 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. We have only one line open. I'm here live in the studio, but our two guests are on the phone, and so we have one line, so you'll have to wait your turn to get on if you want. But we have Joe up. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Wanted to add a component to the issue of electrifying our transportation system as like some grand switch that's going to save us from climate chaos. And you've been focusing on like the lithium mines and like the environmental consequences of that aspect of it. But the road system itself is a huge fossil fuel sink. And the fact that these electrify the transportation strategies basically double down on personal vehicle use means that the erosion and then the necessary inputs for that fossil fuel road system, asphalt and all that, doesn't get any better, and that is just another huge component of why, as a system, like there are problems that cannot be fixed by like switching out this or that material part. That's all I wanted to kind of add to the conversation.
Well, let me just add something, and I'll give you another chance to respond if you want, or you can let our guests do it. But you know, then there's just all the different elements to the automobile, you know, the plastic, all the different metals, there's just vast quantity of stuff that, you know, I guess if we, anyway, yeah, it's a whole system, you know, the whole support system for the automobile is just that's just the one single automobile you see you driving around is just the tip of the iceberg, I guess is what I'm saying. It's a vast system of production for every different element of it. And yeah, Anyway, I'll give you another chance, and then we'll go to our guests, see what they have to say.
Yeah, I just wanted to recommend a book by a local author that really dives into that aspect I brought up about the road system itself being this environmentally costly function. It's called Bikeonomics by Ellie Blue. I actually heard about it when she was interviewed on the KBOO Bike Show, so I recommend that book. And I will take your guest's response off the air because I have a child to tend to.
Okay, thank you. Good to hear from you, Joe. We've been hearing from you, Gary. You can respond, but also maybe bring Duranda back in if you want.
I never thought about that aspect. I mean, like, clearly that's something of a concern, man. Those big trucks driving around with fossil fuel emissions, man. You know, hey, that's there's one mark on it too. You know, I want to see what my cousin Duranda's got to say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really glad that she brought that up, because it's so funny to think that what made us go wrong, what made the humans go wrong, is making everything convenient, right? And the reason why those big trucks and, you know, our road systems require so much energy in that way is because, you know, we jump on Amazon and we're like, hey, we want, I don't know, you know, this one thing from way over in China. So then once it goes to China, it goes across the sea, then it's dropped off at, you know, the Bay Area, and then has to be shipped off and then traveled all the way to, say, Michigan, you know? So what made us go wrong was making everything so gosh darn convenient. And that happens with our grocery stores too. You know, like we say, like, hey, we want to eat really healthy and, you know, have all these vegetables, but are they in season? You know, and where did they come from? You know, those kinds of things. And so I think that brought up a really good picture of, like, hey, you know, all this stuff is really, really nasty, but it's starting to, you know, starting to recognize, like, oh, like, what's happening, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, 503-231-8187. We have about 17, 18 minutes left in the program, so get your calls in now. It looks like we have Elliot calling in. Go ahead.
Yes. I mean, I'm originally a New Yorker, and the Lenape people, you know, weren't thrown off their land once. They were thrown off their land like a dozen times over 100 years. So, I mean, I'm sympathetic to the inherent human rights of all of the native peoples. However, there's an old Groucho Marx movie song based on the line, "Whatever it is, I'm against it." Now, we face a global ecological crisis, and if we went back to the subsistence living of the pre-Columbian Indians, we'd have to get rid of 95% of the human population.
Now, was anybody suggesting that?
Well, you're saying, well, there, you know, there's a tendency to focus on one inequity at a time rather than focusing on all inequities together. And this leads to a situation where some of the best measurement of the global warming carbon dioxide is on the top of Mauna Kea. But there are Indian groups that said that it offends their gods that we have these telescopes and chemical measuring instruments on Mauna Kea, and they should all be ripped down. Lithium has to be for the benefit of the local native peoples disproportionately. I'll give you that. But you know, if we were to defeat all efforts at creating efficient batteries, and so nature takes its course in economics, and we're stuck with...
No, Ellie, let me just push back, and I'll give it over to Gary and Duranda. I'm not sure you were listening. We're talking about a systemic problem of massive overproduction of everything, and the idea that one technological fix is actually going to solve that problem. I think that's the basic argument I'm making. I won't speak for my guests here, But the idea that, as Joe said, that switching to electrification of cars, I think first of all, there's been very little study of actually you're talking about looking at the whole picture if we switched completely to electric cars tomorrow, which is not possible, it's going to take a long time, what would that actually mean for the environment? Let's have an environmental impact statement for the complete switch to electric vehicles in terms of the overall use of materials and the overall impact on the environment. I think that's what we're talking about. But you know, you're throwing together all sorts of different things. I'll throw it over to Gary, who wants to speak. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you, Elliot, for your input. You know, when it comes to it, you know, it's not just we're not just fighting specifically for indigenous people. We're fighting for all people, for every race, for every person, every minority group, every person who lives to choose to live their life differently, you know, because they're all going to get a piece of this air. They're all going to have to, you know, we're all in the middle of a COVID crisis, a COVID pandemic, a respiratory virus illness that is not getting better. We're not fixing the issue in no way, shape or form. We're actually doing bad with it. Where I live, it's the COVID is taking people now. We're getting sick over here. You know, we're not thinking about the fact that we need clean air if we want to defeat this virus. And it's not about electrical vehicles. It's not about any of that. It's about us surviving with a better chance, with clean air, with clean water, with clean land, with people working together to make that happen. You know, we're not going to get anywhere with the corporate state, with their jobs, talking at other jobs, like, you know, like making the rich people rich. We need to understand that this is something that just your basic little mouse, your smallest mouse, your little house mouse, all the way up until your biggest, you know, your eagle that flies up the highest up into the sky, you know. We're fighting for those things because they live off the land too. They live off of nature. They live in nature. We're fighting for those things, and we're fighting against this whole idea about, you know, it's better off with electrical vehicles. We're fighting that, you know. And there's indigenous folks, and there's folks from other races, other communities that understand up to that point, and they're willing to stand in solidarity with us, with Oak Flats, with Stop Mine 3, 4, 5, with MMIW, you know. It's just a matter of we have to be willing to learn. We have, as a people, we have to be willing to you know, really care for one another. That's what it really is. You know, look away from your phones. Don't record somebody when they're in trouble with your phone. Put that cell phone down and go help. And you know, that's a little piece of what we're fighting against.
We're running out of time. Let me hear from Duranda. And then we have another caller after that. Go ahead, Duranda.
I don't have really much to add to that. I'll just let the caller go.
Okay, go ahead, Santiago.
Yeah. So that dude who called in about about the whole like having to go back, you know, subsistence living, essentially promoting like Malthusian folk fascism. That's a BS, you know, like, and that's what I think that's one thing that a lot of people are missing, you know. It's like, we can't, you know, as indigenous people, we can, you know, it's understanding that, you know, we obviously can't return to the past, but understanding that, you know, at this rate, we can't continue the rate of consumption that everything is going at. But I think that trying to tell indigenous people that it's either we sacrifice ourselves, or that, you know, for the greater good, whatever the hell that means, like, that is unacceptable. I think we really need to be doing more to, you know, to really push back against that idea. I mean, we've been stepped on for you know, hundreds of years for the quote-unquote greater good. And I just, mm-hmm. I, That was just really infuriating. I guess my question for the Indigenous Brother, and I apologize, like I'm late to this conversation, but are the folks in Thacker Pass, because I know there's the Iliahi Spirit Runners, and I know that there has been some other like small groups. I think AIM has been out there. But what's the connection you guys are making with other liberation groups, such as like American Indian Movement, you know, like maybe even like some of like the African like socialist parties, you know, like the like Chicano groups, such as like the Raza Unida, which I'm a part of. But then I know there's also some Brown Beret groups that are coming around. Like, what's the connection? Like, what type of connections are you guys making with those groups?
See, thank you for your question, by the way. You know, we're making connections with these other groups. You know, for example, Mass Liberation out in Las Vegas. You know, they stand in solidarity. We stand in solidarity. That's our big thing, is solidarity. You know, we have to understand what the other person, what the other group or organization or community is going through if we want to stand solid with them in solidarity. You know, I'm a member of AIM, the American Indian Movement, and you know, it's one of those things. It's a Pahimaha thing. We put all that down to work together. We're not there, all right. We're not there to fix a pre-existing issue. You know, okay. So we're welcoming and we're open to everybody to go there and, you know, and help us preserve that land. You know, it's just one of those things, man, where if I can only say about it so much, but you have to go out there for yourself and sit with the people and hear the songs and, you know, be a part of it to, you know, to get that wholesome feeling again, you know.
So are people invited to come? What's going on at the camp now? How many people are there, and are people being invited to come and stay at the camp? Are there any particular needs that the camp has?
Yeah, there. Yeah. I'll mention no violence. You know, we're a peaceful, prayerful group, so no violence, no drugs or alcohol. You know, that those are our basic rules out there. If, you know, I'll leave the rest to Duranda. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. There's about 7 people here at camp, and yes, we're inviting people here. We will. And, you know, 7 people, it's not very much, you know, but it means a lot just for the people to take their time out and come and visit, even just for the weekend. Weekends are when we get heavy traffic. We get probably up to like 30 or 35 people, and we do have needs out here. It is getting really cold, and when I mean cold, I mean like 2 sleeping bags, wool blanket, wool socks, you know, 3 jackets, kind of cold. It's windy, it's rainy. We're getting some heavy precipitation right now, and so we do have some needs, and that is, you know, propane tanks is really helpful to keep you know, our stoves on. You know, gloves, beanies, jackets, snow pants, those kinds of things. And we do have, you know, a wish list. And, you know, we can offer that. I'm not sure how I'd get that to you guys, but we do have that. And then also to bring back that other question, we do reach out to a lot of organizations. We work highly with Progressive Leadership Alliance of Nevada, and they are in Reno, Nevada, as well as Las Vegas, Nevada. And in Las Vegas, we actually, Gary and myself, went down to connect with Latinx communities as well as Black communities. And that was really good. And since then, those communities have came up with Pahimaha and seen it from themselves. And we're continuing that work. And we are connected with, again, AIM, as well as the Brown Berets, like you mentioned earlier. And so there's a lot of connections. And I would like to say that, you know, I always want to put, you know, Indigenous people on the board. And there's another lithium mine in northern Arizona on the Wapai tribe. And they're going through drilling right now as we speak. And so I know I stand in solidarity with them. I always want to put them on the board as well. But, yeah, there's some needs here at camp.
So how can people get in touch with you? Is there a website, Facebook, and all that?
Yeah, we have all social medias. We have a Twitter. That's the only thing different. We have it under @Pihimaha, and then all of the rest of our Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok is all under People of Mountain. And then also Gary put up a website. It is protectpihimaha.com. And so you can get connected through us with that. And then we have an email at peopleofredmountain@gmail.com.
So I guess what you're saying is Google People of Red Mountain and you'll find out all that. But that email address sounds really helpful to people. Wow, seven people. It's not quite reached the level of no DAPL yet, I guess, or line three. I guess you're kind of hoping maybe not for such a massive invasion of people. It's a very fragile desert environment there, but sounds like you could use a few more people at least through the winter.
It's one of those things, man. We got four quarters rather than 100 pennies. I just want to lift up my native people out there, my indigenous community. I want to lift them up. You know, if you're on front line, you know, if you're going through some hard times right now, you know, I want to say, you know, we've been praying for you guys, praying for the indigenous people, you know, as well as many others. You know, we're there for you. We're in solidarity with your community. You know, if you need that kind of help, you know, we're there.
Sounds like you need a fair amount of help yourselves right now. But obviously, there's so many struggles going around all over. It's kind of hard to even keep up with them. I didn't even know about that. The Northern Arizona. I know there's already a lithium mine operating in Nevada, and another planned halfway between Reno and Las Vegas by Ioneer Limited, which also faces legal challenges from environmentalists trying to protect a rare desert wildflower that the Fish and Wildlife Service formally proposed last week to be listed as an endangered species. It's a lot going on. We're almost out of time. Give both of you a last word. Duranda, what do you have to say to people out there who are trying to understand this complex issue and trying to see how they might help out?
Yeah. I would just say that we welcome people to camp. We need to start these conversations. And, you know, hey, maybe you do think that lithium's really good. Hey, maybe you drive a Tesla or a Prius or whatever else. That's okay. Come out to camp and start talking to indigenous people. I think, you know, we have some time to, you know, change these opinions or even just, you know, raise that awareness. But I would just like to also say that one thing that's really big in our indigenous communities is missing and murdered indigenous women, girls, relatives, and Two-Spirit people. And I fear that this lithium mine is going to bring in a bunch of workers. I think the environmental impact statement says about 1,200 workers. And if you've ever been out in this Northern Nevada community, it is small, there's not much housing. And so there will be man camps. No matter what Lithium Nevada says, there will be man camps. And so given that the reservation and other rural communities are going to be affected by that, I'd just like to bring that to light.
And Gary, we have about a minute left.
Yeah, come to camp. Self-sufficient, you know, as mentioned before, you know, nonviolent, we're prayerful people. That right there, that Pihimaha is our safe zone. That is our safe spot, our stronghold. We hold it very near to our hearts, and we have been that way for generations now. We're teaching our young to look after that place as well today. And my little cousins have been helping out there. You know, I want to say a ho to them. You know, my little cousins, my two twin cousins, and my auntie, you know, staying strong out there in the wind, in the rain, you know, through all kinds of weather. You know, I want to say, you know, thank you guys. Peace out, you. And any other supporters out there for Pihimaha, you know, you're welcome to come to camp. You know, we're good people for the people. Aho.
All right. Thank you. And I've been talking with Duranda Hinke and Gary McKinney, who are part of the People of Red Mountain, a group that's struggling against a proposed lithium mine in Northern Nevada. And I guess we're out of time. And thank you for listening. Bye, everybody. It ain't money.
representatives. So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful if you got the sense to take care of your source of perfection. Mother Nature, she's the daughter of God and the source of all protection. Look right now and you will see she's only here by the skin of her teeth as it is. So take heart.
Portland, my mommy will care.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on